Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Diane G. from Huntington Beach.
Hi, I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I just have to tell you. Friday night, I got sober April 4th, 1973. Wow. You think, wow. I think, how the hell did that happen? I got sober in this area, in Huntington Beach. And when I first got here, when I was listening to somebody else talk earlier, he was talking about it's a simple program. And it is a simple program. Simple, but not easy. A price must be paid. And that's, when I was new, I had no idea what that price was. When I was new, I had no idea where my life would go. And if I tell you anything tonight that you hear, if you listen to anything I say at all, don't quit. Don't quit before you find out where your life is going to take you. It is amazing. There isn't one thing about the way I live today that I would have chosen. I would have been famous and rich and really, really bossy. That's who I am, actually. But that is not how my life worked out. And I have peace and joy that I didn't even know you could ask for. I had never met anyone who was just at ease with who they were. And I actually am. And let me just tell you how I got here, because it was a long way. I started drinking. Well, way before I started drinking, I had problems. I don't know if any of you will identify with this, but I was someone, I hated people to tell me what to do. It was seriously, really, really didn't like it. And I didn't like people to tell me that I couldn't do something. Please don't tell me I can't, because then I'm going to have to, even if it doesn't work out well. Got to do it once. So I was like that when I was a small kid. I had a lot of trouble, because parents are supposed to tell you what to do. And it was difficult. I had a brother and a sister, which I thought was excessive. I really could have been an only child. I would have been much happier as an only child. And we came out here from Michigan when I was 7. I love California. I hope I stay here the rest of my life. It's just a great place. My dad moved us out here, and when we drove across country, we had arguments. You know how kids do. They were wrong. I was right. I was helping them. And we would fight. And my dad would say, one more peep. One more peep. And I would peep. Because, I mean, I didn't even talk. I peeped. Because I wanted to see how far. That's who I was before I ever started drinking. I was also very insecure, very afraid. But when I got afraid, I got angry. I didn't get afraid and hide. I got afraid and swore. I was just an angry person. My dad worked all the time. My mom locked us out of the house because we drove her nuts. She really shouldn't have had kids. It would have been better for all of us. But she's great now. I love her. She's really old and harmless. But when I was young, it was difficult. And I felt very unloved and very unwanted and very awkward. Because I always pictured myself like 4'9" and really adorable. And I wasn't. I was big. I mean, you know, guys used to punch me in the shoulder. I just have big bones. And I always felt like, do you remember that duck, Baby Huey? I mean, a lot of you won't remember because it was a cartoon from a long time ago. But Baby Huey was this giant duck, and he wore diapers because he was a baby. but it was huge. And that's how I used to feel, like just awkward and not, I did not fit in my skin. So by the time I got, you know, through school and I got into high school, I had incidents throughout the years. I used to get kicked out of school for misbehaving. Like, you know, somebody would tell me to do something, I wouldn't do it. Somebody would tell me not to do something, I would do it. They would send me home. And so by the time I was in, probably, I started drinking when I was 14, and I just started the 10th grade. Somebody offered me a bottle of peppermint schnapps. Oh my God. I loved peppermint schnapps. It was like a warm candy cane. I mean, there was nothing difficult about drinking peppermint schnapps. I was 14, I was insecure and afraid, and I was ready. If I wouldn't have been an alcoholic, that probably would have been the last drink I had. I was an alcoholic because when I took a drink of that peppermint schnapps, I got smarter. Really, really smart. Really pretty and really funny. I loved myself. I was amazing. And then after a few more drinks, who cares? I mean, who cares? Well, I didn't care about anything. It was wonderful. Best feeling I ever had in my life. And when I switched from peppermint schnapps to tequila, I didn't know the difference. Never any difference for me. I didn't go for the taste or I didn't go for anything other than the way it made me feel. That's the way I like to feel. I had other problems when I was a teenager. I ran away from home all the time. When I was young, and you ran away from home, they used to put you in juvenile hall. Now I think they just take you home. But they put me in juvenile hall. And one time I ran away, I had a little problem with the truth. Probably you guys don't identify with that either, but I just had some serious trouble with honesty. And I ran away one time. I lived in Anaheim for quite a while, and there was this little Carl's Jr. over there on Brookhurst, and I was sitting in Carl's Jr. having my runaway meal and having a really good time, actually, and the cops came in. And they had this picture. And they walked up to me with this picture, and they said, "Is this you?" I said, "No. No, sir, that is not me." And I swear to you, I believed it. That's who I am. At the core of me, I am not enough. And so I lie really easily. I used to steal, another one of my bad habits. And I was a surfer for a while, probably a couple of years. I got away with it for a couple of years. I used to have a beautiful big red surfboard. It was so pretty. And I waxed it. A couple of the surfers taught me how to wax my board. The issue with me and surfing is I don't go in the ocean because it frightens me. I'm seriously afraid of sharks. I have nightmares that I'm going to go in the ocean and the sharks will eat my legs or something. Horrid. So I just carried the surfboard everywhere I went so that you would all understand that I was a surfer. Didn't matter that I wasn't. That's also how I became an American Indian. People would say to me, "What is your nationality?" I love the American Indians. I do. I love them. Bury my heart at Wounded Knee. Just, they're amazing people. So I became an American Indian. I think I was a Sioux for a while, and then I was a Lakota, and I think I was a Cherokee for about a year. For 10 years, I was an American Indian. Because I'm Czechoslovakian. And English, and I know. But it was so much better to be an American Indian. So when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the trick for me was to figure out who in the hell I was and what was real and what wasn't. The way I got busted in my ethnicity is a friend of mine named Norm S. who is an American Indian, asked me to come and do some work with our people. It was a very sad day for me when I had to tell him that I am Czechoslovakian and I can't go work with our people. But I have some great American Indian friends, and since I've been sober for a while, I have been made an honorary American Indian, so I'm all cool. That is just a little bit of the difficulty I had when I drank. I also drank badly. I mean, I don't remember a lot of what I did, but it often ended up with me incarcerated. I also hung out with the Hessians and the Devil's Disciples for a while. They are not nice if you pass out at their parties. So I started taking little white pills to help me last through the whole party. And quite often, if you know anything about little white pills, they help you last way too long. And people get really tired of having you around. So they would give me little red pills or little rainbow colored pills too and all. They kind of ease you out. And I did a little acid before it was illegal. I actually did a lot of acid. You might have guessed, huh? A little social heroin periodically. And what happened to me is I became chemically balanced. When I drank and I used the other things just right, I became functional, kind of functional. At least it passed for me. And I never got a job. I didn't work. I wasn't good at that. I was really good at stealing. So I stole a lot. I had difficulty making amends when I got to AA and started the steps because I stole a lot from people I didn't know. I had friends, and we used to break into people's houses and steal things from them. If it was ever any of you, I'm so sorry. And I will be happy to talk to you about it. But I used to steal things from my dad, who I absolutely loved. My dad was probably the one person in my family that no matter what behavior I was engaged in or who I was hanging out with or what recklessness I was involved in at the moment, he loved me. I knew he loved me. He used to tell me he was afraid that he was going to open the paper one day and see me with my throat cut, because that's how I lived. And it really hurt him. If there was anything I could have done to change my behavior for my dad, I would have done it. I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't know how not to take the first drink. So I ended up in jail when I turned 18. And I spent a lot of time traveling to Oregon and New Mexico and different places trying to figure out how to live a normal life, how to do something other than get arrested, get beaten up, get thrown out of places. And when I was 18, I actually was hanging out with some people who had a son who knew somebody who was in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's kind of funny how the connections happen. If you pay attention to your life, people who are not alcoholic do not say, "Oh, really? Take me to a meeting." This guy told me, everybody who drank with me knew I didn't drink well. And everybody who drank with me tried to help me drink better or not drink. And this guy actually had a stepdad who was in the meetings. And he said, "Why don't you just let me take you to a meeting?" I was 18. I didn't have any money. I didn't have anything to drink at the moment. Why not? Take me to a meeting. So he took me to a meeting, and there were old people there. I look around at the young people tonight, and I think, whoa, what are you thinking? I thought, there were old people there. They were 30-year-old people, 40. I mean, I figured the ones who were 50 were going to be dead soon, so I didn't really worry about them. But I was 18, and they were old. And I didn't hear, listen for the similarities. I didn't hear any of that. I just looked at all of them and I thought, I don't belong here. I am way too young for this. So I went back out until I was 25. I got sober when I was 25, finally. But that was after jail, Norwalk State Mental Hospital, and many, many incidences I would choose to forget. Very, very difficult period of time, that 7 years, trying to get sweetly reasonable and come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it didn't help that I was so angry. Because when you're angry and you get angry in people's faces who drink like you drink, just not nice. So I finally came back to AA in 1973, like I said, April 4th. And I came to a group on Friday night. It was called the Friday Night Downtowners in Huntington Beach. And there were a lot of old people there. But they were much younger than they were when I first came. They had, you know, gotten younger. And so one of the guys who was 13 years sober was making coffee. And everybody seemed to have a job in that meeting. They were all doing something. I didn't understand what they were saying. Your job is to learn to be of service. Did that ever appeal to you? Seriously. Being of service? I mean, did that occur to you before you got here? Not me. What can you do for me? What can I do for me? Not how can I help you? So they were all talking about being of service. They were all talking about what you need to do. Don't drink if your ass falls off. All that stuff that they say. And I sat there. It wasn't a lot different than it was when I was 18. But I was so tired. I was so tired of doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting it to be different. I had gotten married and divorced. I had moved. I had gotten cars and wrecked cars and never had insurance, never had a job, just kind of lived on the edge of everything, just on the fringe. And so when I got here, they told me I had to get a sponsor. I didn't want a sponsor because I knew she was going to tell me what to do. But they said they're only suggestions. You don't have to do it. Just listen. So I got a sponsor. I got Irish Annie because she was so funny. And she said the F word from the podium. I love that. She said I used to just say up so that I could watch the old guy's jaws drop. I really liked her. And she was a kleptomaniac, so she had trouble stealing sober. Really liked that about her. And she was sober 5 years. So I figured, yeah. And she turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened in my life. She was amazing. And she wasn't rigid, and she didn't make me feel bad about myself. So I spent a lot of time just hanging out with her. And I didn't do everything exactly right, but pretty soon I kind of got the idea about what you do here. So I would go to the meetings, and my group had about 4 meetings of the same people, different nights of the week, and we all kind of hung out together. And we used to play volleyball and baseball and all of the activities that they do to keep the crazy ones interested. And so I started doing that. And then they made a really bad mistake. They elected me treasurer. Yeah, you know, huh? They elected me treasurer. And I would love to say that I was a good treasurer. I will tell you that I learned one of the most valuable lessons in my sobriety, being treasurer. I learned that stealing is what makes you feel like a thief. It's stealing. It's not the way people look at you. It's stealing. I stole their money. I actually meant to borrow it. I borrowed it, and I borrowed it, and I borrowed it for about a year. And I finally told my sponsor because I was feeling bad. I didn't think they were going to have enough to pay their rent. And she said, you know, Diane, if you tell them you stole it and you make arrangements to pay them back, you will probably be able to stay sober. Can I just tell you how hard that was? All of those faces who looked at me with that trust and appreciation for being their treasurer. And I had to tell them, I stole your money. And I just fully expected them to kick me out of AA. And they said, geez, we've had a lot of treasurers steal our money. Fred stole some money. Oscar stole money. Geez, Steve stole money. He never paid us back. We don't know where the hell he is. We've had people steal money from us and pay us back, and people steal money from us and not pay us back. The ones who paid us back are sober, Diane. Do what you want. I paid them back. I paid them back every penny and probably more because I didn't really have a good record in my head. And so I stopped stealing. And I want to tell you that that is quite a major accomplishment for Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. Because that's what I did for a living. I stole. I don't steal anything. If I get too much change in the market, I give it back. If I get out of the market with something that they didn't see, I take it back. I don't steal because I don't want to feel like a thief. Not because you told me it was bad. Because when I feel like a thief, I start feeling like not enough. I start having secrets and I can't be open and I can't be okay and I can't look in the mirror. I don't want to live like that anymore. I've gotten to a place where I don't have to. And this is what I like. So after I was sober about 6 years, there were actually a few brave women who wanted what I had. Nobody asked me to sponsor them before I was sober 6 years. Because the other thing I did is I kind of commandeered somebody else's husband. This is not the favorite part of my story, but it is true. I met God's will for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was gorgeous and had big brown eyes and a ton of hair, and he was just a good-looking guy. And so we talked about how great sobriety was. We were both 11 months sober, and everything was just great. And he had a wife and three kids, which really didn't come into the picture until after. And he and I ended up getting married when I was 2.5 years sober and living happily ever after for about 11 months. Which is pretty long for me. But the truth is, that's stealing. I don't know about you, but I can't steal. I can't steal anything. It just doesn't work for me. I can't steal somebody else's husband. I can't steal money. I can't steal clothes. I can't steal. It just makes me want to die. It makes me want to drink. And the other thing that my friend did for me when I was fairly new in AA is he got me involved in General Service. I used to think General Service was an outside agency. And it's actually where the book is printed, where the literature is printed. They have a conference there every year, and they decide if there are any changes that are going to go on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it usually takes 10 years per change. So don't get nervous. But it was a good experience. I went and I didn't understand anything they were talking about at the first GSR meeting. It was like they were arguing over a word in the bylaws. Who cares? I mean, I had no idea why this was so important to them. So I did this job for 2 years, and then after 2 years I got elected district committee member in my little area, in my little meeting, and they gave me a gavel. Oh, it was so cool. It's like she got wild with a bell. I love that gavel. It let me have some power, some control. I got to tell people when they could talk, when they had to stop. It was really fun. And then they rotated me out of that position, and they asked me if I would stand for any kind of office in the assembly. And I said, yeah, okay, I don't mind, but not secretary. Okay, I don't want to be secretary. I got elected secretary first ballot. So I was secretary for 2 years. And you know what I learned about being secretary? I learned how to listen. And I learned how poorly I had listened my entire life. I never heard anything you really said because I had too much going on up here. But if you're secretary and you're supposed to have minutes at the end of all this, you have to listen. Because otherwise they know. You never knew when I wasn't listening because I make good eye contact. But they knew. So I was a really good secretary. And at the end of 2 years, I was kind of sorry that I wasn't secretary anymore. So they had another election, and I was pulled out of the hat as delegate. And that was in 1982, 83. So I was panel 32, delegate to the Mid-Southern California area, and I went back to New York. And what I wish truly is that everybody could have that experience, because I finally figured out what it was they were so obsessed about in those meetings. It was about the fact that we are responsible. When a hand reaches out for Alcoholics Anonymous, we are responsible that we are still here. And if we don't pay attention to the things that damage AA or the things that could conceivably dilute Alcoholics Anonymous, AA might not be here for your kids or your grandkids. And what a damn shame that would be. So that's what I figured out. And I also watched guys with huge egos, I mean, bigger than mine, who would get up there and they would have all these opinions and they were right and they knew they were right. And then they would hear from another contingent that had a certain set of problem that required a different answer than that. And they would back off and they would vote for what was needed, not what they wanted, not what they felt was right, but what was needed for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. That amazed me. I had never really seen that happen before. I loved general service, and I did it for as long as I could. When you're done being delegate, you don't get to go around again. So then I started doing the newsletter, and then I got a little depressed. In fact, I got really depressed. I was depressed for 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened to me was I didn't figure out how to deal with my anger in a healthy way. What I would say things, really mean things to people, and then they would back off. And I didn't like that, and I didn't like hurting people's feelings, so I decided not to be angry anymore. Don't do that. It doesn't work. That's the biggest reason not to do it. It doesn't work, because if you're angry, it has to go somewhere. And if you're as angry as I was, it went in. And I was depressed for 4 years. I did not know if I was going to live through that period of time, because I didn't want to drink. I knew too much. I learned too much from you. You got me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know drinking is not the solution to my problems. Drinking will make nothing better. It will make nothing different. I know what drinking does. But dying became a solution for a while. And I got some help. I had a psychiatrist who was willing to work with me for nothing for a while to help me. And he knew a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous, and he helped me. And I talked about my anger, and I figured out that when you're angry, you say you're angry. It's okay to be angry. It's just not okay to hurt somebody else because you're angry. You just talk about it. That's what I love about meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of the things that you hear you may think have nothing to do with alcoholism. For me, they have everything to do with alcoholism. If you're feeling like drinking because of something that happened in your day, and you don't talk about it and you take that home and you do that long enough, you're going to drink. I don't want to do that. And I would hope that you don't want to do that, because Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing. I want to tell you some of the things that have happened, because I can say Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing even when things aren't going my way, even when things don't work out the way I want them to, even when things are difficult. I got a job, my first job in Alcoholics Anonymous, because my sponsor made me circle things in the paper. Anything I could do. Now, I had gone to college, but I spent most of my time in the parking lot drinking, so not too many credits. So I could do very few things, and one of them was drive. There was a job for a pickup and delivery driver. I went and applied for that. He said, absolutely, come let me show you the truck. Stick shift. I'm a girl. Women in my family did not drive stick shifts. And he said, look, I like you. If you can learn to drive this truck in 10 minutes, you can have the job. So I got in the truck, and do you know that on the knob, on that little knob, there are directions how to drive a stick shift. They don't exactly tell you when to put the clutch in. You have to remember that, too. And I didn't always do great at that, but I learned how to drive that stick shift. First gear, second gear, third gear. I knew how to drive it. Only woman in my family. I still know how to drive a stick shift. From that job, I got a job in a publishing company as a managing editor. I had that job for 28 years. I loved that job. I was good at that job. And it paid well. And it let me do a lot of the things I never got to do before. So I really liked that, and I met a lot of interesting people. Race car magazines. Met a lot of racers. Very entertaining. And I didn't have a passion for racing, but I knew a lot about it, and I loved my job. In 2012, well, for about 3 or 4 years before that, publishing kind of tanked, and print media isn't the big item that it was. So they were eliminating positions where I worked, and they eliminated mine in March of 2012. Monday, my position got eliminated after 28 years. Friday, I moved after 2 years, which you've got to know is a lot of fun to do in the same week. And the next month, a big black Suburban totaled my car. Totaled it. So I got up every morning, I asked God to put me where I could be useful, and I went about my day. I went to seminars, I went to the one-stop resource center, I did everything that I could do to find another job. I sent out dozens of resumes and heard from no one. And then a friend of mine said, I need help. Can you take my receptionist's place while she's on maternity leave? And that job led to a job for a year and a half in human resources. And human resources, I found out, is not that much fun because nobody likes you. I mean, if you do it for popularity, you're making a big mistake. They don't like you. And then they were having money troubles, and I was only there a year and a half, so they laid me off. So I have been laid off since January of this year. And I have a lot of passion in my life, a lot of passion for music. I love music. It soothes me and heals me in ways that nothing else does. And I've always loved it since I was a tiny kid. And through Alcoholics Anonymous and not wanting to be controlled by my fear, I learned how to sing in front of people. And it took me a long time, about 12 years. And last November, a few of my friends and I did a cabaret show up in L.A. It was the most fun I've ever had. I would have never been able to do that without you. I'm taking a creative writing course. I've been writing poetry since I was brand new for over 40 years now. But I didn't want anybody to tell me it sucked, so I didn't show anybody. And it's just about not wanting your life to be controlled by fear. by being willing to pay whatever price it takes to just be free. To just be free and live exactly who you are, exactly where you are, exactly in this moment, every day. Because that's what God gives me. I get up every morning, I say, God, put me where I can be useful. I say the third step prayer, and I thank him for everything he's given me, everything he's taken, and especially for everything he's left me with. And I mostly thank him for you, because I have been loved back to life. You have loved me when I was wrong, when I was lying and cheating and stealing. You loved me. You made the difference, and his grace kept me here when I couldn't do it myself. Please don't cheat yourself out of that. Thank you so much.